Michael Darcy.
Today FM. 100 to 102 Today FM. I have the great honour of being here with Gary Lightbody from Snow Patrol. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you very much. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Did you think in 1994, from Shrug to Polar Bear to Snow Patrol, that the journey was going to be this long?
No. I really didn't. When we started, I guess I thought I was very cocky at the start, I think. I thought we'd be superstars by next Tuesday lunchtime, you know, and that's, you know, obviously the first 10 years of our careers, we didn't have any success at all, and that cockiness gets ebbed away, gets whittled away, I'm very grateful to that period of time, actually, even though we were kind of felt like we were banging our heads against the wall sometimes, but it definitely takes the ego out of it, that's for sure.
In the early days when you kicked off, there was two albums on Jeepster, and you were quite an introvert. You would sing whilst looking at your feet, and over time that developed into this immense showmanship. There can be no denying it, but the turning point for Snow Patrol was the third album, Final Straw, and in particular the success of your single Run.
Yeah, no, that was our first hit. You know, up to then we'd kind of been playing very small kind of gigs. Final Straw came out in the middle of 2003, I think August originally. It sold about the same amount of copies as the first two albums had sold. We were kind of thinking, because the Final Straw was kind of a tongue-in-cheek kind of thing, this is our last throw of the dice. It very nearly was, if it hadn't been for Joe Wiley decided to play the whole 6 minutes, because Run is 6 minutes on the album, you know, so it's not a single. She decided to play all 6 minutes of it on radio in the daytime in December, and then everything just changed.
It's funny it's called Final Straw, because the perception is there that you really spill your guts out to the world here emotionally. Eyes Open is the follow-up album that features Chase and Karis, which is arguably one of the greatest love songs of all time. And it's funny how it was written, because you were on a full white wine session. It was the day after. You're sitting in your producer's garden in Kent.
We're in his garage. Yeah.
Mad. And then you wrote Chasing Cars, which is probably the purest love song that you will ever write.
Yeah, it might be the only true love song I've ever written. Everything else seems to have a kind of a slightly, you know, a sting in the tail of sorts. But Chasing Cars was a purest love song. That sounds about right.
There is a beauty to the origin of the name Chasing Cars, because it comes from a phrase your dad had relating to your pursuit of ladies. You're like a dog chasing a car.
Well, yeah, no, he didn't have very much faith in my abilities with the fairer sex, and he was absolutely right to not have. I was terrible, very, very shy, very, very, I would just go bright red if I talked to a girl and then kind of go completely mute. He's just being a dad, you know what I mean? As in trying to give me a good hard time for it, you know what I mean?
We'll do it all. Let's move on to Wildness. And this is not an album that follows the previous love themes of Eyes Open or Final Straw. It's an album about life and coping with yourself. When it was released, there was a beautiful scene on one of the videos. I believe it's the video to What If This Is All The Love You Ever Get? And it's you on a raft with a piano, isolated in many ways. Am I right in saying that this album is a new theme? It's like an exploration of conflicts.
Yeah, it's the deepest I went into my own kind of into my own stuff. I opened as many doors as I possibly could, because I'd always been afraid to kind of deal with quite a lot of those themes, sobriety and depression and, you know, my family, things like that. I'd never really spoken about that stuff, and I figured that after I got sober, it was time to start going deeper, you know. Whoa.
Well, let's talk about your experience at Writer's Block. In 2012, after an extensive tour, you and the guys, you needed a break, and it was evident that grafting as hard as you did, it had taken its toll. So then 7 years later, after an absence in the industry and no writing, you're listening to Nick Cave, Jesus Alone, and the flow starts again.
Jesus Alone was one of the songs that we were listening to a lot when we were making the record. Jackknife puts on a lot of music. His studio was insulated, sound insulated by albums. It's just around the whole thing. So we will listen to music whenever we hit a brick wall, and he put on Nick Cave's new album, as it was at the time. And the first track came on, and I just kept asking him to put it on repeat. And then out of that came A Youth Written in Fire, which is about me getting sober. My favourite song of Wildness. So I've a lot to be thankful to Nick Cave for, but I had a lot to be thankful to Nick Cave for before that.
There's a lovely quote, and I know you know this quote, and I think it's quite relevant to say now, everything that happens is from now on.
No, that's Bon Iver, yeah. When I first met Ed Sheeran, him and I talked about tattoos, because he was starting to get a lot, and now he's, you know, his arms are completely covered, but at the time he was just starting to get quite a few, and he said, "Do you ever think about getting a tattoo?" And I said, "Yeah, just one Bon Iver quote." Ed said, "Everything that happens is from now on," and that's when I knew we'd be pals.
You've been hugely supportive of younger acts on their way up. We saw this at Ward Park recently. What's interesting is that Ed Sheeran, when he was coming up, you guys brought him out to America in 2012. And this time round, here we are 7 years later, and he's bringing you guys out.
Ed's first American tour was with us, supporting us. But even then, he was causing, you know, he was causing a stir. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't. He'd already established himself as a force. You know, yeah, he didn't really need our help at all. But it was very kind of him to bring us on tour with him and play stadiums. I mean, he's playing stadiums just on his own, which is an extraordinary thing to witness. Play to 80,000 people standing up there with just you and an acoustic guitar and a loop pedal is nobody else can do it.
So BBC have released a documentary called Snow Patrol 25 Years on the Road, and there's a great scene in that where you and Johnny decide to take a domestic flight to Dallas, and you're playing support to Ed. Now, you didn't think the flight was going to get delayed. It does. Then Neil, your tour manager, has to arrange a police escort. That had to be nerve-wracking.
Yeah, because we literally got in, you know, I think half an hour before the show, and if it hadn't been for the police escort, which, by the way, we do not get a lot of police escorts. That's in 25 years, there may have been four. We arrived half an hour beforehand, and we were looking on our phones to see before we left the airport of how long it would take in normal traffic, and we would have arrived halfway through Ed's gig, so we would definitely have been late. We're very grateful to Neil our tour manager, for some fast thinking on that one.
The acoustic gig yourself, Nathan, and Johnny performed in Mexico. That seemed like it was a gig to be reckoned with.
It was pretty awesome. Yeah, I mean, playing in Latin America is. It's kind of a dream for any band. Like, you know, if you're wanting to know where you haven't maybe just starting out, and you want to know where the best crowds in the world are, they're in Ireland. And if you're an Irish band, well done, you've lucked out, you've won the lottery, because your home gigs are your best ones, and in Latin America, and it's you know, it's just extraordinary, because they go completely bonkers, and they're singing every word back at you in a second language, and it's. That stuff will impact you in a way that you didn't think possible. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing to hear that.
It's so good to have you guys back touring. The last time we spoke, you mentioned that you would have notebooks full of songs. Do you still have all those?
Yeah. They're all written in kind of hieroglyphics. I know how to decipher my own hieroglyphics, but I don't know how to write music or read music. So I've sort of developed my own way of writing things down that might not be easy to read for anybody else.
Let's talk about depression and alcoholism. It can consume you, and it can be hard to find a way out of those dark places. At this moment in time, over 2 years sober, do you feel that your health is better now, or in a better place now?
Yeah, much. It's actually 3 years today. I stopped drinking sort of 10, 12 days before my 40th birthday. Probably not the best time to stop drinking. Yeah, it probably was the best in terms of like for my health. But I missed, you know, possibly the best party that I ever was going to have, because I'd actually arranged to go to France for the Euros to watch Northern Ireland play the first three games anyway with a bunch of pals. So there was six of us going. I was in LA at the time about to fly, and the doctor said, "You're not going anywhere, son." I had all kinds of things going on that were alcohol related. All my pals went and they were just sending me videos and updates. I was kicking myself sitting there. A very, very sober affair. But it was the best decision I ever made for myself personally. I think if you can drink in moderation, that's great. But I couldn't. I was one turn to ten for me very quickly.
There is a beautiful moment in 25 Years on the Road where you describe your bandmates or brothers as not giving you a phone call, but they arrived at your door.
They were in Ireland and England between the two of them and between the four of them. Excuse me. And that's the last I heard a few days. I think I was in touch with them, some of them, the day before, and they were in Belfast, as far as I knew. And my doorbell went, and it was the four of them at the door together. And because they'd heard that I was in trouble. And times like that, you kind of realize how special it is to have those guys with you, to have guys that that have your back.
So we have Snow Patrol in Malahide this week in Dublin, but Ward Park, that's an institution to you guys. 35,000 people in a field. It's a special place, isn't it? Ward Park is a special place to you.
Yeah, it is. I played football, learned how to play football there with my dad when I was, you know, however old you are when you learn how to play football, five. Not that I ever learned properly. Very average still. And Johnny Quinn was a banger boy when he was a kid, and he learned how to ride his bike there. So that park has been a part of our lives from we were nippers. And the first one was in 2007. And there was 30,000 people at it. The second one was the biggest gig ever in Northern Ireland. There was 42,000 people at it. So we knew we weren't going to get 42,000 people because it's been such a long time. But we did think that we could, even though we were being advised against doing it by some people, we thought we'd get the same amount of people as the first one. So to get 5,000 more people than that was an extraordinary thing. To get 35,000 people after 9 years away from doing it is... I'm just so grateful to everybody that came, and it was one of the best days ever. I thought Ward Park 2 was our best show ever, our best day ever.
Well, it's quite evident from the response to your Irish gigs that the audience has not forgotten about who Snow Patrol is. You've mentioned in other interviews that your voice is still coming back and getting into the swing of things. How is it at this moment in time?
It's okay. I think it's strong when it's if you'll excuse the boast, when it's in good nick. And then if sometimes on tour you do three shows in a row. On the third show, on those three show runs, it gets a little sketchy. There's been 2 weeks in between Ward Park 3 and Malahide, so if I'm not in good voice on Friday, I'll be very surprised. I'm really looking forward to it. It's something we always treasure, is playing in Ireland. We can't wait.
On a final note, I want to mention the support that you've given Lyra McKee's family, and it's something you've done continuously for young people, whether it be politically or whether it be people involved in music, but it's for the betterment of the future generations of young people coming up, particularly the work you've done with Irish artists, and it's so important to the future of the Irish music industry to keep it alive. I want to thank you for that.
Well, thank you for that. And there's so many people that are working hard for Irish music, you know, our unsung heroes, certainly in Belfast and Dublin, all over Ireland. I'm just really, really glad to be part of the music scene in Ireland at the moment, because it's, you know, it is in rude, rude health. In Malahide, we've got David Keenan who playing on the same bill, and someone that we have invited personally to play. He's an extraordinary talent. He's one of the most extraordinary songwriters to come out of Ireland, and we're just really delighted to have him on the bill.
You've given a lot of support to Ro as well. She's fabulous.
Ro is brilliant. I mean, all the bands on the Ward Park 3 bill were from Northern Ireland, and it was something that was very important to us to kind of highlight the scene, because when we were coming up ourselves, and Ash, you were also on the bill in Ward Park 3, and Therapy, Divine Comedy, sort of had come just slightly before us, there wasn't really a scene that was sort of woven together, galvanized. Most people had moved away from Northern Ireland, like ourselves, going to Scotland to sort of make it, in inverted commas. Now people are staying in Northern Ireland. There's record companies, there's management companies, there's studios, there's great producers, there's great venues, there's the scene is flourishing. There's loads and loads of great bands. We had 11 Northern Irish bands on the bill at World Park 3. The scene in the Republic of Ireland has always been strong. There's always great bands in Ireland, and it's something that is just part woven deep into the psyche, into the DNA of Irish people. Whereas in Northern Ireland, we are now experiencing something that we haven't really experienced on this scale before, where we have so many great bands all at the one time. So we wanted to celebrate that up there in Northern Ireland, and it's a thing that should be celebrated. Our culture is something that we can all be very, very proud of, even at times when perhaps things are heady and difficult and dangerous times.
The Lyra McKee situation shocked a lot of people down south, to the fact that there's still an element of trouble that exists. It's so easy to be oblivious that this is happening, you know, when you're living in a place and you're not near it and you're down at the bottom of a country. But at the end of it all, we're just one island. And there's a lot of love out there. Unfortunately, there's a lot of idiotic behaviour as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. Look at the way, I mentioned the Euros. Look at the Euros in 2016. Two of the four nations that won the Best Fans awards were Ireland, Northern Ireland, and Republic of Ireland. That is our natural way that we are out in the world. You know, if we could, you know, like I would just love it if that was our natural way with each other. that would be a beautiful, beautiful thing. But I think there are so many people that do feel that way, and that, you know, at the times when we can think of Ireland not as a political entity or a religious entity, but as a geographical landmass, and that we all share this island together, and that we all need to, you know, have each other's backs.
You've been more than given with your time. All I'll say is, it is good to have you back, Gary.
Thank you. All this feels strange.